Mr. Daugherty.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, James Daugherty for Petitioner Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League. Without objection, what I propose to do is to first address two of the three central issues that we've raised in our briefs, and then to turn to the jurisdictional defenses that have been advanced by the government parties. The centerpiece of our case, of course, is that when the NRC reissued the construction permits for these two power plants, they lacked statutory authority for doing so. Here's the basis of our argument. If you look
at... I think, you know, the way we work, unfortunately, is we have to get over the jurisdictional issue first. So if you could do that first, then we'd know whether we really get to the merits at all.
That'd be fine, Your Honor. The first argument the NRC has made is that jurisdiction has been defeated because we sought reconsideration of the Commission's decision. And frankly, it took us a long time to come to grips with that argument because we had assiduously avoided seeking reconsideration. We're administrative lawyers, and we're familiar with Bell South, and we understand that if you do that, then you undercut jurisdiction. So we deliberately did not invoke the NRC's elaborate procedures for seeking reconsideration. And the way the case was set up when the Commission made its first decision, it was just a sort of clean, administrative, informal action. They said, we're issuing these permits, and it was a done deal. There was no hint that there would be further proceedings, and we thought it was set up perfectly for judicial review, which is why we filed our petition. It was only weeks later that things started to get complicated. Evidently, the Commission decided that they would offer some sort of limited after-the-fact hearing and invited our parties to submit petitions for intervention.
Can I ask you about that first point? So my understanding from your briefs is that what you appealed with your first petition, your March 30th petition, was the government's January 27th decision. Is that right?
That's right. Okay. Although I think that there's a dispute as to the date of that. It was kind of very informal. Sometimes the date is posted as February 18th, but it was 2009.
But it's definitely not the March Federal Register notice.
Right.
Right. Okay. Right. So, and in that decision, as I read it, the court voted to approve the staff's request to proceed with the evaluation and to grant it if it was supported by good cause. Is that right?
That's not the way we understand it.
Isn't that almost word for word what it says?
Are you talking about the Federal Register notice?
No. What happened in January?
The initial decision from which we sought review consisted of four individual opinions by four commissioners,
right,
with different dates. And there was no summary, there was no announcement as to what the outcome was. It was just four opinions as to how we should go on this. Three voted to reissue and one voted against. That was all we had to work with, and that's what we submitted to this court.
Well, what did you think they had decided?
They had agreed to the application to have the permits reinstated.
But that's not what the application was, though, right? The application of the staff...
The application was from TVA. They had sent a letter to the Commission saying, we want our permits reinstated.
Right, but what they were, maybe I am misunderstanding, but it sounded like what the NRC was voting on was their staff recommendation. Is that not?
Well, I'm sure in all things the Commission gets advice from its staff before it acts. What they were really responding
to. If I read Chairman Klein's comment, as you said, there are four separate decisions, and the first one says, I approve the staff's request. Is that not what they were approving or disapproving?
No, it's not.
Well, in each one of it says subject staff recommendation related to reinstatement of the construction permits.
To me, that's just the way they handle the paperwork. From a legal standpoint, you had an outside entity that did not possess a construction permit come to the NRC and say, we would like construction permits. And then the commission, in that opinion, and that those decisions said, yes, we grant your request.
Can you tell me a page where it says yes? That is, the staff's recommendation, this is getting clearer because this wasn't clear from the briefs, I didn't think, but the staff's recommendation, which is at JA-92, was... The staff seeks to obtain commission authorization for the recommendation to go forward with review and action on the Tennessee Valley Authority's request. If the commission agrees, the staff will evaluate TVA's request for reinstatement and determine whether it's supported by good cause. If the staff finds the request acceptable, it will prepare an order granting the request. And then the orders that you point to, that is the four separate opinions, are all approve or disapprove the staff recommendation. That's what it says on each one. So that's why I'm having difficulty seeing how that could be a final decision. All they approved was a decision by the staff to go forward, and if this and to permit the staff to grant if the staff made the good cause finding. Why is that wrong?
Well, the parties interpret it differently. And if you read TVA's brief, what they say is that when the NRC acted in those decisions to approve their request for reinstatement of their permits, they went forward. And they were...
Say that again?
They immediately started, they made investments
after,
in the plant.
After what?
After the 2009 decision by the NRC, the four separate opinions, that was deemed as a granting of their request for reinstatement.
Of course, TVA's view of the meaning of the NRC order is not in any way relevant to our decision making here. Can you
No, I'm saying, but what happened on the ground was that they sent out an army of engineers and experts and started rebuilding these plants. So they interpreted it as a granting of their request and as a green light. So those are the facts on the ground.
Are there any words in the January decisions that support the proposition that it was more than just an approval for the staff to go forward?
No, as you know, as obvious, there are just these four individual opinions, and that was seen as final, as an agency action. And there was never any subsequent point at which the commission itself said, this is our decision, and here are the implications of it. There was
well,
just a Federal Register notice.
They did in the Federal Register notice, which you you strenuously state you're not petitioning for review of. In that one, I think it does make quite clear that they have reinstated the permits.
That commission had, yes.
Yes.
In the past
tense,
exactly.
Well, it doesn't say when they did it, but it's the only announcement that it's being done. And so that would seem to me a possible final decision, although then there's the question of reconsideration. But
well, we interpret that as the Federal Register announcement of the past final decision. And what they said there was that we are going to consider an after-the-fact proceeding, but it was very much after the fact.
But the Federal Register notice says, it is hereby ordered that the permits are reinstated. It doesn't say they have been. It says it is hereby ordered that, which does not sound like past tense. It sounds like something they're ordering immediately. It doesn't say we have ordered this in the past.
Could you give me a page state, Your Honor?
Of course. Usually we do this in the opposite way, and I ask you, but here I'm happy to do it.
Trying to find justice here.
Yeah, it's JA 185. The right column, the last paragraph.
Well, I agree that this was the notification as to what the NRC was doing, had done.
It doesn't say had done, though.
Well, I'm not going to be able to read through it right here.
Okay. You'll have a chance on reply. Go ahead. Continue with your
But we also, of course, sought review of the follow-up decision that was rendered in 2010. And at that point, the NRC had initiated this proceeding. We moved to participate, and the commission put the whole proceeding on hold, saying, wait, we're not going to consider these contentions. We're going to reconsider our decision from last year on these legal questions, such as whether we have the authority. And they invited briefing on that question, which we provided. And then they came down and they reaffirmed that final decision. At that point, they said, we're done. This represents the culmination of our decision-making process, and to the extent this administrative proceeding goes forward, there shall be no consideration of these legal issues.
Right. So, but it was, again, quite clear that they had decided the legal issues, but not the other remaining issues, and that they wouldn't be done until the remaining issues were done. They were done on the legal issue.
Right. And the proceeding was bifurcated.
It was bifurcated, but there was no final result until all the issues were resolved. It's like I don't see how that's different than a district court deciding what the law is with respect to the trial, but then going forward with the trial. And even if you disagree about the law, you have to wait until the trial's over before you can appeal.
It's very different, Your Honor. What typically happens in a construction permit proceeding before the NRC is that they do not issue the permit until all of the proceedings have been concluded. That's not what happened here. In this case, At some point, early on in this process, I think in 2009, TVA got the message that their permits had been reinstated. And if you read their briefs, you'll see that they began to spend millions of dollars with consultants to do just that, to rebuild the plants. And in fact, it was around January of last year that they achieved a new level of permitting in the NRC system. They went from terminated status to deferred status. This was because they had busily acted on their reinstated permits. So that had been in effect for at least a year, if not a year and a half, before we got to the rest of the administrative proceeding. The initial action were immediately effective, and that's what makes them reviewable.
Well, can I ask you, why did you not, maybe this is an unfair question, but why did you not petition for review from the September 29th decision?
We felt that the important issues were the legal ones. We were convinced, remain convinced, that the NRC has no authority to do this. And we're frankly somewhat disappointed when they announced an opportunity for an after-the-fact hearing, because we had no illusion that we'd make any progress in that. And we were afraid, though, however, if we didn't participate, we'd be attacked for failing to exhaust our administrative remedies. So
I understand why you participated. I don't understand why you didn't appeal when you lost.
Oh, I see. Well, at that point, we were disinterested in those technical issues. We felt that the proceeding itself...
But it would have protected you from the argument that what you did appeal from wasn't yet final, and that it wasn't final until the end of the proceeding in which you participated.
We also were afraid that the commission would take this for a year or two. We had no idea how long it would take for them to review that appeal. And meanwhile, TVA was busily rebuilding these reactors.
That doesn't answer Judge Garland's question.
We didn't appeal because we didn't want to take the time. It could have taken a year for us to brief that, argue it, get a decision. Meanwhile, our rights were being impaired on the ground day by day.
You already petitioned in March. You've now petitioned twice.
Right.
It's a serious risk that you petitioned at the wrong time both times.
Oh, I see. Why didn't you also
petition on September 29th?
We felt and feel that the existing case is immaculate, that it's a final agency action with immediate effectiveness and consequences. And if you apply the standards for reviewability, the question is, has the agency completed its decision-making? And secondly, can this court exercise review without impairing the administrative process? And the answer to both those questions is yes. We consider this case ripe and your jurisdiction unassailable.
All right, now I've eaten up a lot of your time.
Yes,
go ahead.
I'll touch on the merits. The structure of the AEA provides that if you have a construction permit and you lose it, you are out of the system. And that's expressed clearly in Section 185, where it says that you forfeit all of your rights.
That's if it's expired.
Right.
And it hadn't expired here.
Right, but the point is you're either in the system or you're out. In this case, actually, is more clearly expired.
Well, you're out of the system if it's expired.
I understand. But in this case, TVA intentionally and deliberately went to the agency and said, we want out of this system. We don't want to spend the money to continue to maintain these plants, and we want this permit terminated. So they deliberately took themselves out of the system. Mm-hmm. It's important that these permit holders stay in the system if the NRC is to exercise oversight, because they need to access, they need to assess penalties. So they took themselves out of the system. Now, the way to get back in is prescribed in the statute. You must apply. There's an application. They didn't follow that path. Instead, the NRC said, come around back, and we'll work something out with you boys because we have a 40-year relationship. But that's what violates the law. There's a process that's been prescribed by Congress.
Do you think the process in Comanche was consistent with the statute?
Yes, I think so. But that's utterly unrrelated. The test in Comanche...
Well, it's the point there is that it had expired, right? And then it was reinstated
right after
the expiration, which the statute, under your theory that you just articulated a minute ago, should have gone back through the process.
Well, we have no problem with Comanche Peak, and it's actually a reasonable system and a reasonable result there. This is not that. In fact, the idea that good cause...
It's a reasonable result there, but I think your theory of the statutory language... for this case would have meant in that case that they should have gone back into the process because, in your words, they were bumped out of the process.
Well, if you look at the Commission's policy on deferred plant status, it emphasizes that in order to maintain this mothball status, you must maintain the currency of your permit. If you lose the permit, you're out of the system. And that's all part of the congressional structure, is that once your permit's been voided, you can only come back in through the front door. And that's not what happened here. I see my time has expired.
We'll give you time for rebuttal. Mr. Suttenberg?
May it please the court. I'm Jeremy Suttenberg, and I represent the NRC and United States. I'll be splitting time with TVA, and we've agreed to split the time 12 and 3. This court lacks jurisdiction to address the merits of Breedle's petition. In this case, Breedle was trying to be in two places at the same time. After the NRC reinstated TVA's permits in March of 2009, Breedle went straight to this court to challenge the reinstatement. But then, about 50 days later, Breedle went before the NRC to challenge the reinstatement.
What do you make of our orders which say that the proceedings are to be held in abeyance? And then our second order, I think, says held in abeyance pending conclusion of the agency proceedings. Wouldn't that lead a reasonable litigant to assume that the petition would ripen upon the conclusion of agency proceedings?
We agreed with Breedle to hold the cases in abeyance because we were under the impression that Breedle would file a timely petition at the end of the proceeding, thus rendering any jurisdictional defect moot. And so we decided, instead of filing motions to dismiss and clogging this court up with motions practice, we would just hold it in abeyance and then address it later.
That doesn't follow. If you thought their filing could not satisfy jurisdictional requirements, you'd move to dismiss.
We didn't move to dismiss because we really are under the impression that Breedle would just file a timely petition at the end of the proceeding.
Still doesn't follow. If you wanted to assist the court, you would say, get this out of your system. It doesn't belong here. Don't muddle up anything.
Well, then perhaps we should.
We don't think it exists, and our suggestion to you is don't hold this in abeyance. There's nothing to be held in abeyance. You have no jurisdiction to consider any of this. If they're going to file, they'll have to do it when we're done. That's not what you did.
Well, then perhaps we should have filed a motion to dismiss after the 09 petition, but we can't waive jurisdiction. And so
I understand all of that, but we haven't decided yet whether what they did was infirm. I mean, that's what we're trying to sort out here.
We maintain what they did was infirm because they were trying to be in two places at the same time. They went to court to challenge the reinstatement order, and then about 40 days later, they went before the NRC to challenge the reinstatement order. In common sense terms, they were asking the NRC to reconsider its decision to reinstate.
That's not part of the regular provisions for reconsideration, though, is it?
No, it's not, Your Honor.
And this was highly restricted, right? It was about all that had to be shown was good cause at that point, right?
No, Your Honor. It was not as restrictive as Breedle lets on in its brief.
It was more restrictive than a normal petition for reconsideration to the agency, wasn't it?
The way it was treated at the NRC and the way Breedle interpreted the Federal Register notice was that it would be allowing a full-fledged review of the legal issues. So they submitted contentions before the NRC challenging the legal authority of the commission, and the commission ordered full briefing on that and then issued a full ruling. So they had the same rights before the NRC that they would have had in court. It amounts to a reconsideration petition when they went back to the NRC.
So I understand your position about being in two places at the same time, and that's a reason why our court, held it in abeyance and didn't proceed simultaneously. But then the phrasing of the orders, in particular the second one, held in abeyance pending conclusion of the agency proceedings, would suggest, at least as if I were a litigant, would suggest that the court thinks it is premature, but it'll be reactivated upon the completion of the final proceedings. In fact, October 28th, 2010, the motion you filed says, in light of the September 29th, 2010 NRC decision, NRC respectfully requests that the court now reinstate these cases to the active docket. It doesn't say they have to file a new petition for review or anything like that.
Well, because this is a Hobbs Act case, there's the incurably premature doctrine that would apply to any of their premature pleadings. And so if they filed a premature petition, subsequent agency action can't secure this court's jurisdiction. They would need to file a new petition. And they simply did not do that here.
They had no obligation to seek reconsideration following the 2009 order, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So they filed, and what they sought review on was reviewable, right?
What they sought...
Forget what happens after the fact. What they sought review on was clearly reviewable, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So they filed a timely petition for review. They did not seek reconsideration and were not required to do so, right?
I'll agree that they were not required to seek reconsideration,
and
but...
And they did not seek reconsideration. They then saw that something else was going on. And as responsible litigants, they said, well, you know, can we join this? Let's, you know, if you're going to keep talking in an area of interest to us, we'd like to participate. But we have our timely petition for review on board. The agency appears to join that notion by saying, well, you know, we're still doing whatever we're doing. Can you at least hold this in abeyance, this timely petition for review? Can you hold it in abeyance?
Well, from a semantic standpoint, I'll agree they did not label their petition a reconsideration petition. But if the court looks at the substance of what Brito was trying to do, they were asking the NRC to change its previous decision in sort of common sense
not
terms.
Not in a proceeding, I'll make sure I understand this, not in a proceeding that they in any way initiated.
They didn't initiate.
Well, something that was going on, you noticed, wouldn't it have been irresponsible of them not to find out what was going on and participate? It might implicate their interests?
Our view of the case is that Brito had a choice in March of 2009. They could have either gone directly to court, which they did, or they could have gone back to the agency, which they did. But they couldn't do both. They had to choose. And by choosing...
Well, you know, the reason I'm asking this is because, at least in my many years of experience, what would have happened if they hadn't done this, the agency probably would have come in on its own motion and asked the court to hold their petition for review in abeyance. Because you were doing more. And they were just sitting there, and they were saying, we filed a timely petition. We're doing nothing. The agency can do whatever else they want to do. We have a timely petition for review. You would have come in and asked for it to be held in abeyance. Would that have caused their jurisdiction to be lost? Of course not.
Well, I'm not sure how you could have come in to try to hold it in abeyance.
As a prudential matter, you would have said, you know, we're considering some more things. And it might affect the result here, so we appreciate the court not wasting its time and our time. Hold this in abeyance, and we'll give you notice as soon as we're done as to what we've done.
That would have been dependent on Brito filing its hearing petition before the NRC. If Brito just did not file a hearing petition, there would have been nothing to hold in abeyance. It would have just been...
No. They filed a petition for review, and there's another proceeding going on that they have not initiated.
In many situations
where that happens, agencies will come in and say, you have a pending petition for review for a party that has an interest in what we're now doing. It's timely, but we'd like for you to hold it in abeyance.
The proceeding wasn't initiated until Brito submitted its hearing petition. So at the time Brito filed its petition for review, there was no ongoing proceeding at the NRC. That proceeding only happened after Brito came in. So there would have been nothing for this court to hold in abeyance if Brito hadn't then come back to the agency. It also doesn't matter that Brito filed its petition for review before it filed its hearing request before the NRC. This court has held that the order of filing is irrelevant for purposes of Hobbs Act jurisdiction, and that's because the danger of wasted judicial effort that attends dual court and agency exercise of jurisdiction applies with equal force when you file a petition after.
Can I ask you, you answered Judge Edwards' question, which is, had Brito not, by the way, they didn't file a petition. They petitioned to intervene, right? But you answered that question that had they not done that, they could have then appealed. And I'm, perhaps I should say, dumbfounded by that position. I thought that your view was that the January 27th decision was not a final decision.
Correct. The January 20th.
Well, then why are we spending a lot of time on the question? If it's not a final decision, it's not a final decision. It doesn't matter whether they tried to seek reconsideration or not if they didn't appeal from a final decision.
Well, the March 2009 decision was a final decision.
I'm aware of that. I agree with that. So if they had petitioned for review from the March 2009 petition, then you would have to rest on this reconsideration theory. But they have made quite clear in their reply brief that what they petitioned for was from the January 2009 decision.
The January 2009 decision wasn't a final decision.
So why isn't that all you need to say?
Well, because I construed them as challenging really the March 2009 decision, not the...
Well, did you read their reply brief?
Yes, I did read their
reply. And what does their reply brief say in 10 places that they actually petitioned for?
It says they petitioned against the commission votes, although they're unclear about whether they were petitioning from the votes or a subsequent commission decision.
Well, it says repeatedly it's the January decision, though, isn't it? Isn't that what they say?
Yes, and Breedle is just incorrect about there being any sort of January decision to reinstate the permits.
Well, if that's what they're petitioning for review from, you don't need your argument at all on whether reconsideration renders it unripe. Isn't that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. We could argue sort of in the alternative that they just haven't challenged a final decision in their, I guess, 2009 petition, and then their 2010 petition just challenges an interlocutory order because the commission had just denied two of their contentions and referred the remaining seven for further adjudication. And so once Breedle decided to go the administrative route, they had a duty to see that administrative hearing through to the end, which they did not. They did not follow that principle here.
I'm worried that we're somehow involved in the confusion when we hold cases in abeyance that are not final. The proper course for the court when it gets in 09 and 010 would be to dismiss under your theory, not to hold things in abeyance, right? Because nothing can be, you said, reactivated in your own motion. Nothing can be reactivated under your current theory that you've just articulated, correct?
Correct. I guess under the incurably.
So why are we holding things in abeyance, and why are you suggesting that we hold things in abeyance when it's just creating confusion for litigants?
Perhaps in retrospect, we should have filed a motion to dismiss after their first petition, and perhaps the abeyance order did create some unfortunate confusion, but that doesn't get around the fact that it's a jurisdictional issue that can't
we're going to be writing an opinion here. Would prefer for this kind of problem not to happen again so that everyone at least knows the ground rules as to what's going on. And when we hold something in an abeyance, that's actually when someone's going to have to file a new petition after the subsequent decision, we're arguably creating some or sending some mixed signals. No?
I will agree with those concerns, and perhaps in the future there can be better procedures that are used by the court and by both parties to hammer home that you need to file a petition that challenges a final agency or a final NRC order. I see that I think I'm running into TVA's time.
Well, then maybe we'll run out of it, but I think we haven't touched the merits even for a second. So I don't understand how it is possible to do what the agency did, given its letter to TVA saying that your application to withdraw construction permits is granted. Accordingly, the staff considers construction permits to be terminated. Now, once that's happened, how is it that you can have another policy other than seeking to have a new permit granted? You've terminated the previous permit. You haven't withdrawn it. You have a whole big process, a policy about deferral. What's the point of the policy about deferral if you can skip the policy? But I'm not saying there's any intention. I don't believe there's any secret motivation here or something. But I think the larger point of opposing counsel is you have a deferral policy, the intention of which is to make sure maintenance of these sites continues. And that's an interpretation of the statute. And then you just skip it completely. You terminate it, and then you allow it to be reinstated.
Well, we in the 2005, what we were doing is allowing TVA to withdraw. So in terms of the termination, we weren't using our revocation authority to get rid of the permit that way.
What does it mean when you say it's terminated? And you didn't say it's, we're going to hold it for you in case you want to come back. It says it's terminated.
What that means is that TVA no longer possessed a valid permit. And the reason why we decided to reinstate the permit is that there was a more than 35-year regulatory history between the NRC and TVA. And so the NRC considered TVA's reinstatement request not in a vacuum, but in the context of that history, and decided that reinstatement was reasonable.
But it's a I understand you have a policy argument, but I don't see the statute doesn't give authority to do those kind of things.
That's correct.
It gives very specific sets of authority.
Well, the statute also, under Breedle's theory of the case, the statute wouldn't have given us authority to allow TVA to even withdraw its permits, because the statute doesn't mention withdrawal anywhere in Section 185 of the statute, which deals with construction permits. So if, and I believe Breedle would agree that the power to allow withdrawal is inherent within the broad delegation, and if that power is inherent, then the power to reinstate, if reasonable, is also part of that delegation. So that's where we would derive.
They would say that withdrawal is the same as, if you say terminate, that's the same as revoke. It's been revoked.
It was an unfortunate use of language, but we didn't revoke the permit. We didn't invoke our revocation authority under the statute, and we arguably under the terms of the statute couldn't, because one of the grounds for revocation is not a licensee wants to voluntarily withdraw their permit. It's just something that the statute simply doesn't address. Like reinstatement is something that the statute doesn't
address. Did the NRC provide any supervision over the site during that period? Was the TVA required to do anything over the site to maintain it, to prevent water from coming in, prevent parts of it from being taken out, anything like that?
No, Your Honor, there was no oversight over the site during the two-year gap. But TVA won't be able to operate the plant until the NRC is convinced that they have satisfied all regulatory requirements, and the public will have another chance to participate at the operating stage.
But you could skip, under that theory, you could skip the permit idea altogether. Don't provide anything public until we're at the operating stage.
Well, they were reinstated to the activities that they were only able to do under the original permit. So they would still need to have a valid permit in order to have a permit reinstated. So the terms and conditions of what TVA is allowed to do at the site now is limited to what they originally had to do.
But normally you can't do that without a hearing in advance.
Correct, Your Honor. And interested members of the public had that opportunity for a hearing.
After the fact.
Well, back when TVA got their original permit, and then here after
when they got their original permit, there hadn't been any construction on the site yet.
Correct.
And so so they couldn't have commented at that point, I don't know, 50 years ago or whatever it was, that the site's been degraded during this period, or that there's already partial construction and partial construction is not safe. None of that could have been made. Was it 50 years ago that they had their opportunity?
I believe it was in the early 1970s.
Yeah.
So it was a long time ago, Your Honor. But parties back then would have been able to make those challenges, and Breedle will be able to make
these
challenges.
They wouldn't have been able to make the challenge that they want to make now, because they couldn't have possibly anticipated it.
Any challenges that Breedle would want to make now about corroded parts, et cetera, Breedle can make at the operating license stage of this proceeding. So this isn't Breedle's only bite at the apple. Breedle will have a whole nother chance to litigate these issues in a couple of years when TVA comes in for their operating license.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you. We'll hear from TVA now.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Maria Gillen, appearing on behalf of Intervenor Tennessee Valley Authority. Because I represent the licensee in this case, I would like to address why the Commission's decision was reasonable given the on-the-ground reality at Bellefonte. Initially, I would like to address Mr. Daugherty's claim that TVA immediately resumed construction activities upon the Commission's decision, various decisions that he refers to. That is absolutely untrue. And in fact, no construction is going on now. We have not given a green light to resume construction. There are many quality assurance issues that are going on to account for the two-year cessation of the construction permit.
So what do you construe Mr. Daugherty's meaning about when he says that there was an immediate effect? Was there any kind of immediate effect at all?
In terms of what we were doing on the ground, yeah. and immediate effect of which, the January...
I'm not talking about the law question, but what were you doing? Were you doing anything on the ground in after the January decision?
On the ground, we were doing various environmental reviews required under NEPA, and our realization was, as was the commission's, that the almost two-year cessation of the quality assurance program was an issue. So we would have to come up with a system to assure that all components in the units would meet all applicable regulatory requirements. And so that was the sort of activity that was and is going on now. Thorough walkdowns of all of the areas of the plant to identify any components that may have been affected by investment recovery activities that went on during those 2 years, and to either...
Can I just ask, is investment recovery...
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Is that a pseudonym?
Term of art that I told myself not to use.
That a pseudonym for taking things out?
Taking things out. That is true, Your Honor. That is what that is. And
you said
all
that
of,
with a smile, and I appreciate that.
And the process going on now is to identify all those components, bring them into compliance with applicable regulatory requirements, and TVA has also made a commitment that if we cannot guarantee compliance with an applicable regulation, that we will remove and replace that component, whatever it is. And Your Honor, Judge Garland, you had said you don't think there was any gaming of the system going on, and I can assure you that this would be the penny-wise, pound-foolish kind of approach that TVA took.
Well, Mr. Daugherty's position doesn't really depend on whether there's gaming. I mean, obviously, if there was gaming,
correct.
It would be even worse, but his is an argument that the statute doesn't permit it and that it's not reasonable in light of the kind of problem that we're talking about. Perhaps to prevent gaming, but in any event, simply to prevent problems. So, in a way, it's a sidelight whether there's gaming or not.
True, and I just wanted to assure you there is not. And in essence, as Mr. Suttenberg said, there is no explicit provision for reinstatement. There are several provisions giving authority to the commission to issue and do things with construction permits. There was a gap. The commission filled that gap in a very reasonable manner, given the 40-year, almost 40-year history of regulation that it had with TVA.
What do you mean there's a gap? You mean the commission wasn't prohibited from doing this?
Correct.
That's not a gap. I mean, the case law on that, we've gone through that with agencies. You can't come in and say they're entitled to deference merely because the statute doesn't positively prohibit them from doing what they're doing. You got to do better than that.
Right, and that's not what I'm saying, Your Honor. It's not only that the statute does not prohibit it, but Section 185 gives extensive authority, as does the Atomic Energy Act, to the commission overall, to especially in 185, to deal with the issuance of and the monitoring of construction permits.
I mean, isn't that precisely the point? If it's that extensive and clear in what it gives, then wouldn't we conclude if it doesn't give this, then it's not there for the commission to take it, and that they ought to do it according to the procedures that exist, which is, you know, you had a terminated, I'm no longer here situation. If you read the statute, one way to read it is, well, then you have to petition again.
That is one way to read it, Your Honor, but I would suggest it's not the correct way.
Based on what? There's nothing in the statute that says your view is correct, and the policy, your preferred policy, can't cure the statutory problem if indeed the statute said, here are the things you can do.
I think this case is quite distinguishable from the ones where this court has ruled that an agency was overstepping its bounds. The commission is given authority over construction permits and operating licenses. This is a subset of a construction permit proceeding. It is not grabbing jurisdiction or authority over something completely unrelated and not addressed in the statute.
Well, I mean, why is it analogous to a situation where commissioners say, oh, don't make X bother with all of these procedures. They're new. Even though we haven't had a direct history with them, we know them. They're really good people. They're responsible. Just let them get going.
All I can say, Your Honor, is that's not what's happening here.
What's the reason for having such an extensive policy about deferral? Isn't the whole point of that is to ensure maintenance during period when construction isn't ongoing?
It is, Your Honor.
So why isn't that, what's the rationale for not that not applying to this situation, which is exactly the same? There was a period in which construction was ongoing. There was no maintenance or supervision going on other than removal.
I think that goes to what the commission had to do here, which was balancing two very strong competing concerns. And the balance on this side was it was confronted with two very advanced units that were already at advanced stages of construction, that had had many years of impressive inspection records with the commission, and that the public had had opportunities to comment on. Making TVA go back to square one would have cost a lot of money that had already been expended on these units to relatively no end that is not being accomplished through the procedure that is in place now with the reinstatement of the quality assurance program.
Okay. Further questions?
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Dorich. I think your time expired, but I'm afraid we ate up a lot of your time without giving you a chance to even talk about the merits, so we'll give you another 2 minutes then.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to talk about the timing.
I'm sure the presiding judge will give you this minute back, but I want to make sure.
I'll give you the minute back.
I want to make sure I understand something. What did your petition, I can't find it from you. What did your petition for review seek review of in 2009?
The commission's
say precisely.
The commission's decision to reinstate the construction permits for the two reactors.
Didn't cite a date?
We cited the date of the last of those four opinions. That was when presumably they had a quorum and they had a decision. It may have been, there was some confusion. I thought it was January 27th. Someone said it was February 18th. But it was, once the fourth commissioner had weighed in with a vote, then we had a decision. And there was no evidence that there was going to be some formal announcement. It's not the usual situation here.
And what your reply brief repeatedly says is January 27th. I take that to mean all four of those.
Right. That was the date of the last.
Yeah.
It started in December. If arguably we sought review of that prematurely, that charge cannot be leveled at the petition for review we filed a year later. A year later, the commission had gone through this process, they requested briefing, we had briefed it, and then they issued a more normal NRC decision saying we reaffirm both the act of reinstating these permits as well as the rationale. There was no change in any of the rationale of the votes. At that point, we had a final decision. And
well, you're on shakier ground if you have to rest on 2010, it seems to me, because there was still more to be done.
Well, see, at that point, Your Honor, the commission bifurcated the proceeding. They said we're going to separate the legal issues from the non-legal issues.
It doesn't matter. I mean, Judge Garland's analogy to what goes on in district courts and the bifurcation, I mean, there's some authority supporting
I refer you to Massachusetts v. NRC, by this court, and to the Oyster Shell Alliance case. In both of those cases, this court took review of NRC decisions, despite the fact that there were pending proceedings underway before the NRC. And the court applied this same two-part analysis I'm talking about. If the specific decision in question is final, and if review can be afforded without interfering with the other proceedings, then review should be afforded.
That was, if I'm not wrong, those are the immediate effect cases, right?
Yes.
And in those cases, one of them is an FCC case, right?
No, these are NRC cases I'm talking about.
No, I know that, but they're relying on, so one issue, could you tell me what the immediate effect was? I'm just puzzling through this here for a minute.
The immediate effect was the TVA got a green light to go forward with all the studies. Obviously, they weren't rebuilding the plant within a few months. There's a million studies, and they had to make up somehow for this two-year period of darkness. So that was when they engaged their contractors and engineers. That they were
talking about TVA here, or are you talking about in Massachusetts versus NRC?
I'm talking about here.
Oh, yeah. What was the immediate effect in Commonwealth?
No, I was talking about in the Oyster Shell case, uh-huh. A low-power license was granted. Other proceedings...
That's an FCC case.
No, that was a... That was actually my case.
Okay, but so that one, they were allowed to go forward, right?
The NRC proceedings were continuing while this court took review and issued a decision uh-huh. on the immediately effective low-power license.
But they were immediately able to begin low-power operation.
Limited kind of activity, right.
Right. Well, but operation of... operation in the sense of producing low power, right?
Sure.
Okay, in this case, what is it that they're allowed to immediately begin doing?
There are lots of millions of dollars.
Well, that's money. That's a different, that's not harming the environment. That's not creating a nuclear risk. That's not going forward with power. What they've said they're doing is assessing the environment. They could have done that anyway, couldn't they?
Well, mostly what they're doing is making up for the missing 2 years of no records. Mm-hmm. This is all in order to get these plants built. And what they're doing is they're making commitments of resources that are going to tilt the equities ultimately before the commission and before this court. If they invest $50 million in this, then in fact this plant is partly reconstructed. So it's important to get a stay just to preserve the equities.
But it's not the same kind of immediate effect as actually operating power, right?
Right, right. No animals were dying. I agree with that. I want to add one other point, is that this whole proceeding below was highly irregular. The reinstatement of these permits had never been done before. It was done in an informal way with opinions on different dates. Subsequently, they offered a hearing, but the standard was unlike any hearing standard we've ever seen before. The burden was placed on TVA to show the good cause existed for reinstating these permits. So even though the NRC has very elaborate and well-honed administrative procedures, this was outside of all that. We had no reference. This didn't fit in any of the rules. There was no precedent. So we were really doing our best to aggressively protect our issues, but we were forced to guess. And I think that we deserve a little bit of slack if there was a slight miscalculation. We were filing multiple petitions and filing briefs and hiring experts and doing what we could to participate actively.
But if the earlier petitions were incurably premature under our doctrine, the mere fact that they were held in abeyance can't help you, correct?
I think that's right. But I profoundly disagree that the 2010 petition...
And the mistake, if there is one, and again, we'll analyze the finality of the earlier ones, the mistake was not filing yet another... petition after the September 2000.
I would concede that there's an issue about the first petition, but the second petition followed a final decision on this legal question, and there was no more administrative proceedings going forward on that question. And I think under the standards set forth by this court and the cases we cite, review was ripe. There was no flaw in the court's jurisdiction.
You're not claiming that the court's orders somehow misled you into thinking that there was...
No. Finally, I'd like to say if the NRC is going to get into this business, the precedential implications are enormous. There are a lot of nuclear power plants around the country that were partly built and then mothballed. And so if the NRC is now going to be in the business of reinstating these permits with an exchange of letters, this could be very important. They're sending a message to the owners of these plants saying, first of all, if you're in a deferred status, you don't have to be. You don't have to spend millions of dollars per year to maintain these plants because you can drop out of the system as TVA did, and then at some point in the future, either 2 years from now or 20 years, you can come back in. So they've changed the incentives for even mothballing these plants.
Are those other examples you're citing expired or not?
Mostly it was like the Washington Power System plants. They just killed the plants because they couldn't afford them. As to the status of their permits, that would be case by case.
Right.
If they're in deferred status, they have permits.
Their theory here doesn't necessarily cover the situation where there's been an expired, where the date's passed.
I suspect we don't know that there's a lot of plants that have just been walked away from, and they're now all of a sudden eligible suddenly for reinstatement. This requires careful thought, this requires judicial review, and it requires a full environmental analysis.
What if the hearing had been before, which is what, among other things, you want, right, that it be treated.
Right.
Would it have to be as extensive a hearing as if that nothing had ever been done over the last 50 years, or is there some kind of process for, if you were to get what you want, which would be a hearing before, that wouldn't require the same length?
I think it would be unlike any other proceeding that's gone before, and that it would be so simple. I mean, these papers have been submitted. As they say, they had a 40-year relationship for many years.
50, yeah.
The staff had, NRC had staff on site. They had the documents. I think that would have been much, much easier than your typical construction permit proceeding. But at least we would have had a right, and others would have had a right to participate.
Okay. Thank you. We'll take the case under submission.